Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker here to tell you that the Stat Sheet Podcast is presented by Box Score Network. Box Score Network is your one-stop shop for all things NFL podcasts. You want game analysis, betting lines, hot takes, or fantasy advice? Well, check out Box Score Network and follow Box Score Network on Twitter at BScore Network for updates. All right, welcome back in, everybody, to the Stat Sheet Podcast. We are stuck right in between week 11 of the NFL season and Thanksgiving. We are geared up for a fantastic slate of games on Thanksgiving Day, on Black Friday, on next Sunday, on Monday. But we have a lot of football to talk about from this past week. The game we just watched, the Eagles and the Chiefs, a phenomenal game between two of the best teams in the league. Ronan's here. Simon's here. We have a lot to get to, injuries to get to, a firing already, preludes to more firings possibly. We have all kinds of things to talk about. Privileged to have you with us. Let's get it started. The Eagles beat the Chiefs 21-17. Really a hard-hitting game. Both teams showed up to play, I thought. Very different than last year's Super Bowl. Simon, first thoughts?
Yeah, first thoughts were I just love watching these defenses play. I think these have been really the top two teams all year. You could obviously argue Baltimore, and especially with their defense, but Chiefs and Eagles never have felt like they've gotten pushed off their spot after last season. And last year was all about the offenses, and we knew what, you know, the Eagles were doing defensively as well, leading the league in sacks. But these two teams, I think, have epitomized what 2023 has been about, and it's been about You better have a defense that comes to play, and it was a defensive battle, and I love the back and forth, so it's going to be fun for us to kind of dive into here a little bit. Ronan, how about you, man? What were your first thoughts coming out of this game?
I'm right there with you, Simon. The defensive lines in this game proved why, you know, these teams are where they are, standings-wise and record-wise and just momentum-wise. This was a game that, you know, you're sitting there in the third quarter and you're analyzing both teams and, you know, how they've looked. And truthfully, it was a game where even if the team that loses, you know, there's got to be a loser, right? It's a game. You won't necessarily hold against them, right? There are tons of times where we see two powerhouse teams go head-to-head, and one team steamrolls the other, and the team that loses, you know, kind of tucks their tail in between their legs and, you know, walks off. And the media's like, you know, what's wrong with this team? Is this, you know, trouble, or is this an indication of what's to come in the future whenever they have to, you know, in playoff time? But I don't think that you can really take that away from, you know, the Chiefs' loss in this game. It was just a gritty game. It was a fun one. It wasn't pretty, but It's late season football, Ben.
Yeah, you know, my takeaway was it's obvious how good these two teams are. It's obvious how talented they are. And yet at the same time, you could also see all their flaws in this game. It was obvious to see their flaws as well. And yet, man, did they put on a show. So I'm going to go back to what you kind of opened with, and that is these two teams in Baltimore have really been the most consistent three teams out of the gate this year all year long. We've seen teams look better at certain points, but those teams have all faded and come and gone too. These two, along with the Ravens, man, nobody's knocked them off their spot, exactly like you said, Simon. So that's what stood out to me really more than anything is, man, I don't statistically expect both of these teams back in the Super Bowl, but I could see either one of them showing back up very easily, Simon.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, part of that, and part of being a good team is just being able to be so multiple in what you do. And the Chiefs have been the perfect example of that from a year-to-year basis, right? You go back, what, 4 years ago when they make that first run for the Super Bowl or whatever it was, and it was the high-powered offense and Kelce underneath and Tyreek Hill deep and, you know, Patrick Mahomes was just bursting onto the scene. And then last year on the Super Bowl run, it was like Isaiah Pacheco was this like darling that came out of nowhere. And it was like, wow, they're running the ball. And Jerick McKinnon out of the backfield and then Kelce over the middle. And this year it's like top five defense and Patrick Mahomes can make D plus receivers look like B minus receivers sometimes. And let's see how this works out. And then even within the season, because the first half of the year, the Chiefs offense was still rolling, was still looking pretty good. They were figuring out the receiver thing. Here so far, and in the back half of the season we've played so far, it has sputtered a bit, but the defense continues to look even better. And then for the Eagles, it was a slow start for them and connecting on their deep shots at the beginning of the year, right? And we've seen that slowly and steadily get better to the point here tonight, their final touchdown drive, the two big passes to Devonta Smith, and that, you know, that ended up being the game winner for them. So seeing these teams roll with the vibe of 2023 in the NFL, but even within the season of themselves, kind of figuring it out. And that's what you have to do when it comes to the end of the regular season and into the playoffs. It's self-scout. It's, hey, what are these teams going to do to try to beat us? You know, for the Eagles in this one, it's, hey, we've had so much turnover at the linebacker and safety position this season. Okay, so what do we need to make sure we accomplish? Okay, well, we have to limit what they do over the middle of the field with Travis Kelce. How do we do that? Well, let's just stick Kevin Byard on him the entire game, and we'll let everybody else figure everything else out. And, you know, in the first half, it looked like the Chiefs receivers were going to make some plays, right? Justin Watson made a few nice catches. Kadarius Toney was getting some runs around the edges. Rashee Rice was starting to get involved a little bit in the middle of the game there. But then when it comes time to really make those plays, right, what did the Chiefs count on? And that's Travis Kelce. And what happens? Kevin Byard's been in his ear the entire game, right, in his jersey. And Kelce made a couple nice catches, but we saw a couple drops too. We saw a couple times he couldn't quite get open. And the Eagles are one of those teams that, especially defensively, it seems like continue to warm up and go as the game gets going, right? I think that's what we saw in this one. They were just able to stick with it. And eventually their offense kind of found the creaks, the chinks in the armor. So from the Eagles' perspective, I think we saw kind of the best of them and what they can do. And the Chiefs, Ben, still have some stuff to figure out.
Yeah, I agree. And again, we talk about flaws here. We know that the Chiefs don't have the greatest passing game or the greatest set of wide receivers in the league. Matter of fact, they would be down toward the bottom end. And that pops up consistently for the Chiefs this year. Now, that may not keep them from winning the Super Bowl. I'll talk more about that later. But you can see it that they're struggling to pass the football every week. You can see it in this game. I mean, when's the last time we saw Mahomes with 177 yards? I mean, it could have been this season. I don't know. But it's not very often, right? And yet we saw it tonight. Chiefs were kind of controlling the first half and part of the third quarter, but that went away, and the Chiefs really didn't have an answer to kind of come back once the Eagles got rolling. So you can see the Chiefs' flaws and limitations there. Will that keep them from winning the Super Bowl? Maybe. Maybe not. The defense is so good. Simon, you mentioned it. You were first, I think, out of anybody I heard on this Chiefs defense being this good early in the season before they really made their statistical rise. And, you know, Ronan, just like you were on the Jets midway through last year, Simon was on them this year. It's not a secret anymore. Everybody knows how good the Chiefs defense is now. They are rolling. They are a legit top five defense in a year that has seen some pretty hardcore defenses. Kansas City is right up there, and it really hinges on that secondary mixed with intelligent blitzing, mixed with Chris Jones demanding so much attention in the middle. It's quite a potent mix, and it's going to travel if they have to go on the road. It's going to travel in the Super Bowl. It's going to travel wherever they go. It's going to play well at home, and yet still you see them not being able to punch the Eagles back late in this game. You saw the Eagles, another good team, able to come back in here and just basically outscore them in the second half. Ronan, what else you got for the game?
You know, I do want to go back on what you just mentioned and how the Chiefs defense has kind of improved so much over time. This is kind of a hypothetical, and sorry to derail a little bit here away from game coverage, but how much do you think Tyreek Hill not getting signed and not getting that big deal affected that defense, you know, kind of going up in stock? Simon?
Like helping the Chiefs defense be able to focus on that side?
Right. Just more money allocated towards the defense, because it's obviously not going to the receiving core right now.
I mean, And I can't. I know Ben's. I can't wait for Ben to get on this. So I'm gonna let him go.
I was about to jump in, but
it didn't.
You know,
it didn't go to the defense.
First,
It didn't go to the defense. This is all. I sneak preview. I recorded this week's episode of the Simon Shore podcast already, and I talk about Steve Spagnuolo and what he's done for this Chiefs defense. And a big part of it is coaching up all the young guys on this team. They have drafted extremely well. And they've developed extremely well. I've talked on this pod so many times about all the young defensive backs, the first and second year guys, and even a guy like L'Jarius Sneed, a fourth round pick, who when they drafted him, he was like their third safety. And now he's the starting outside corner, and he's like a legitimately good starting outside corner. But I mean, who are their big, you know, free agents that they've added to this defense in the last few years? It's Eric Reed, the safety. Drew Tranquil, who's on a like 1 year, $4 million contract, something like that. I kind of made that up. So maybe I'm wrong there, but I'm pretty sure that's all he got. And like, they haven't even given Chris Jones a big contract since they let Tyreek Hill walk. The investments they've made have been, you know, to Patrick Mahomes, to the offensive line, which are excellent places to put them. But no, defense. I mean, the defense has shot up because of good drafting and good coaching. Ben. Contracts in the Chiefs, man, and a big time QB. Hop on in.
Yeah, so you're right. So Justin Reed got part of that money. Patrick Mahomes is getting the biggest part of that money. Simon mentioned that. So part of the reason you let go of Hill is because the Mahomes contract continues to just grow every year and engulf a bigger part of that cap space. And then Simon mentioned it. The tackles are getting the money. Their left guard is getting the money. That's where the money is going to. But what we are seeing here is part of the Tyreek Hill trade is draft picks coming back in, which gives you flex to use some of that on defense. So you are seeing the younger guys, the draft picks, as a result of the Tyreek Hill trade. But this is where I was going to go earlier, and I said I'd put it off for a few minutes. The Chiefs are the new Patriots. They have become that. So while the Patriots had the coach-quarterback combo with Belichick and Brady, the Chiefs have just as good with Reed and Mahomes. And then they have the same cap management style, basically, that the Patriots had. It was you use a guy up, and then when his value is the highest, you let him go. Instead of hanging on to him for dear life, you trade him away for assets. You get to keep your cap space and your cap flexibility. And that's kind of the style that they're doing. And most important of all, Simon already mentioned this, the Chiefs are remaking themselves every year or every other year. They're not stuck on we do things one way. And the Patriots, we saw them do that for 20 years, continually remake themselves. They would go from tight ends to running backs to slot receivers to a couple of years with Randy Moss to, oh, by the way, we're the best defense in football, which, oh, by the way, now it's just Brady and nobody else. I mean, you saw them every two seasons kind of remake themselves. And the Chiefs are starting to do the same thing. And it's not flashy, but it wins a lot. And you know, so they're doing very well at it. So that's my opinion, Ronan, of what you were asking there is, yeah, it's a part of that process, even though the money didn't go directly toward that defense. It's a part of that remake process that Kansas City does.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think hopefully in the future, it'll help with retention, right? Keeping Chris Jones around, you know, keeping a guy like Bolton around. You know, they're, like you guys have mentioned, they've been hitting on a lot on draft classes. And at some point, those guys are going to have to get paid. And you can't keep everybody. You know, like you guys mentioned, they'll probably let a few go just because they will let a guy go whenever they're at their highest value, because typically they're going to keep going down. But thank you. Thank you. I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on anytime get Chiefs and contract in a conversation. I know it's going to be a whirlwind.
So I have a couple things specifically in the game that we just saw, but I want to get to one more overarching thing first that Ben hinted at. The Chiefs offense isn't what it's been, right? They're like, I don't know if it's populated for tonight's game yet, but when I looked the other day, they were like 13th in points per game. They're like 10th in yards per game. We know that they had those two ugly Broncos games a couple weeks ago. It's clearly been a struggle for the Chiefs offensively. outside of, you know, ripping on the receiving core, which we could do, but we've done before. We don't really need to dive back into it. For this year, for 2023, for this run, what do we think they can lean more into or change, whether it's schematically or play calling or from even with the current roster, shake up the depth chart a little bit, something? What can they do to kind of get this offense back in a place where we feel like it can win a Super Bowl? Or do you think, like, hey, like, it is what it is. It's an above average offense. It's a top five defense. Like, it's just going to be what it is. Ben, I'll start with you.
I tell you, I think they're already doing it, and that is they seem to be protecting Mahomes, which is important. Not that the tackles are doing great. They aren't. But still, the Chiefs are calling plays that allow Mahomes to get the ball up quickly. They're spreading the ball around, which, of course, Mahomes always does. They're trying to run the football some, even though they really haven't been great at that in most games. But they are trying to mix it up, and they are producing at a high enough level to where they can win most of their games. So they're already doing a lot of the stuff that I would suggest. The only other thing I can think of, now I am worried about them at the end of games. We've seen it now in at least two games where we thought, oh, Mahomes and the Chiefs chance to win it, which, by the way, you know, dropped 50-yard touchdown pass. But still, we've seen the Chiefs here in a couple of games. You think, oh, they're going to win this thing and then not do it because they just don't quite have that firepower. The only other thing I think I would do is maybe get a little bit more aggressive early in the games and try to take leads. Still doesn't work against the Eagles, but in some of these playoff games, maybe try to get out to an early lead where your defense can play fast and downhill. That's the only other thing I think I might would do is just get more aggressive in the first half. Ronan?
Truthfully, I don't know if I'm necessarily the opposite, but, you know, the first half of this game, Pacheco was on a roll. He was keeping guys on their toes rather than their heels, you know, allowing Mahomes to kind of pick apart where he saw fit. So I think doing more of that could honestly be a key to this, to success. I wouldn't say the key, but I think if they, you know, went about it that way, because that dude runs angry and they have the offensive line to, I mean, this was a pretty tough defensive front, and they ended up putting up 168 yards on 30 carries, right? So, and 30 carries and a loss at that. So, I don't know. I think relying more on, you know, whether that be Pacheco or just the run game in general, I know that's not necessarily Andy Reid's favorite thing to do because it's, you know, air it out, but especially whenever you've got Mahomes, but I don't know. I would say the run game, because anytime you have defenses thinking about the run with Patrick Mahomes on the field, that's whenever good things happen for the offense, Ben.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think both what you and I are saying, although they're different, I think either one would work, and absolutely, there might even be a blend. I do think the Chiefs are already doing a lot of the stuff that it would take to keep this offense viable. I don't necessarily see a big offensive explosion coming. Simon, anything else from you on that?
Yeah, I love both of those answers. I want Pacheco to get the ball so much, man. I just want Pacheco to touch the ball every single play. Like I'm honestly at the point where I'm thinking, take Patrick Mahomes off the field and direct snap to Pacheco. Just like, no, listen. Running game, you both mentioned it. It was great tonight, 168 yards, but also they haven't been doing it much lately. At the beginning of the year, here's their first four games, right? 90 yards on the ground, 101 yards on the ground, 153 yards, 204 yards, and then they don't break 100 yards for the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. They come out of the bye week this week playing Philadelphia and they get 168 yards on the ground. I am hoping that that continues, because I think it fills a lot of the holes that this team has from an offensive perspective. If they can create heavier boxes because of a good run game, a consistent run game at the beginning of the game, to Ben's point, like, lean into your strengths earlier, try to get that score up. I think it can create some more room for these wide receivers, because I think that was what was happening in the first half. Pacheco had lots of good runs in the first half, and the receivers were getting open more. They started to go away from it in the second half, or started to have a little less success with it. So then they started to scale it back. And then we saw those receivers have tighter coverage on them to try and make some of those same catches they were getting in the first half. I would really, really like to see that. So I'm with you guys there. Also, like, I know I just said I want Pacheco all over the place, but like, get McKinnon back in there, man. That guy had an amazing last third of the season last year, including the playoffs. Let's get both of those backs more involved. My specific thoughts on this game, I had two big ones, and one of these is to that point, to the offense's point. Two turnovers on either close to red zone or at least in Philadelphia's side of the field trips. Now, I had tweeted this out from the StatSheet account. Basically, remember that like the Eagles didn't score off of those, so like that could have proven to be pretty costly for Philadelphia, right? You get two Kansas City Chiefs turnovers, you win the turnover battle 2-0, and you don't score any points off of it. Like that could really bite you in the butt, and it almost did. But I mean, there's two scoring opportunities right there, right? Kansas City scored 17 points on this one, two touchdowns more. You know, you got 31. You're feeling real good. 31 points on the Eagles, big primetime win. That's a big difference, right? You can't turn the ball over. And to the Eagles, you better score some points if you get some turnovers. So we always like to watch that. But then let's dive into some fourth down decision talk, because I know that's everybody's favorite. And let's see, where was it? Oh gosh, my phone. End of the game comes around. They're on the Chiefs are driving. They're on the Phillies 40-yard line, I want to say. It's 4th and 4. There's 5 minutes left to go. They elect to punt from the 40. It's a touchback. They're only saving 20 yards of field position by not going for it. The Eagles go, and 7 plays later score a touchdown. Was this a red flag for you guys? I think Reed does get a little conservative when the games get close and get tight here at the end. I know the defense is playing great, but that Eagles offense is still the Eagles offense. Did this decision stand out to you guys either way? Ronan, I'll start with you.
No, not necessarily, because on the flip side of it, if he had gone for that 4th and 4 and he didn't make it, we'd probably be sitting there like, I don't know, did he feel like he had something to prove here, you know, rolling the dice? So, I mean, 5 minutes left, you have Patrick Mahomes. I mean, realistically, as long as you get the ball back with, you know, 2 minutes left, you know, maybe even a little bit less, you feel pretty confident. So I don't hate it, especially whenever your defense has been playing as well as they have this season. It to me, it was more of a vote of confidence to the defense. Hey, get out there, you know, shut them out so we can show them why we didn't have to go for it, which, you know, ultimately didn't pan out, Simon.
And quick correction on myself before I kick it to Ben. There was 9 minutes left at this point. So it was 3rd and 4 from Philly's 39, 9 minutes and 4 seconds, or 8 minutes and 56 seconds when they punted the ball. Ben, how did this decision kind of go to you?
Well, and obviously Andy Reid's thinking the same way that Ronan's thinking, but I would have been the exact opposite. Now, listen, if I was on my own 35-40-yard line, I'm punting, no question about it. I don't want to give the Eagles a super short field. But when I'm already over there on their 40, 39-yard line, something like that, and I've got Patrick Mahomes and it's 4th and short. It was 4th and 4, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I'm going for it. There's no question about it. Because one thing is, I don't think 17 points is enough to win the game, which is what I had at that point in time. The second thing is that the Eagles offense scares me because Jalen Hurts is trouble. You just never know at what point, even if he's having a sucky game, which at times he did tonight. I mean, it was not like he played a great game. It's just that he's so freaking dangerous all the time. And so that scares me. I would have gone for it. I wouldn't have even hesitated. And that flips for me when I'm back on my own 40. But when I'm on the other team's 40, man, I'm going for it. And I wouldn't have thought twice about it.
Yeah, because for the Eagles offense, because to me, I love Ronan's point about like vote of confidence in the defense. I think you're given that as somebody who has grown up with, you know, watching Steelers defenses and a team that doesn't ever go for it on fourth down, which is frustrating. I think you're giving your defense that vote of confidence. If you're like, hey, if we don't go for it, like, I think you guys can defend these 60 yards, right? Versus. Now, of course, they're hoping that they get a great punt and they're backing them up right into the end zone.
Right.
But it's the Eagles offense, man. And you're saving yourself a few yards there. But like you said, Ben, 17 points, even in a down Eagles game, is not going to be enough. No, and that was the, you know, that next drive, that was the last score of the game. So we went another like 6 minutes or whatever it was of game time without another score. That was the Chiefs' last opportunity. And that was a drive where Mahomes was kind of getting a couple passes actually complete. I think that was the one. I think that he might have had that nice Justin Watson completion over there on the left side during that same drive. So it felt like some stuff was actually starting to happen, and just like they had been shut out the whole second half. Yeah. That was their opportunity to get a little bit more juice, have a little bit of momentum on their side, Ben.
Yeah, and again, this doesn't change what I would have done. I would have flat out gone for it. But part of the plan, you mentioned it, Ronan mentioned it, was not for the punter to kick this into the end zone. It was to be down somewhere inside the 10. Yeah. And I'm sure the thinking is, we're ahead, they're inside the 10, they're starting to get a little desperate. We've got the aggressive defense with an excellent secondary. Maybe we get a turnover out of Hurts here. Maybe is what happens. So that's an important piece of the decision that didn't happen, which would have tilted things maybe. But still, I would have gone for it and would have thought twice about it.
The only other thing I had from this one, guys, it was a great game. It was a ton of fun to watch. Again, I think we all think both teams are still really great. Just posing a little thought exercise here. The Marquez Valdez Scantling drop. We've seen that same scenario play out dozens of times with him. Have we seen more drops or catches in that scenario, do we think?
In that scenario alone?
Streaking down the field, three steps of separation over the middle of the field within a couple strides of the end zone. I mean, I've seen that dozens of times. Does he have more drops or catches in that instance? Going back to his Packer days.
It's pretty close.
I don't know if it's close, Ben.
Okay, maybe it's not.
I don't know if it's close.
I don't know how many career touchdowns he has, but I'm gonna go with the over on drops.
Yeah. Has anybody ever played for two better quarterbacks, Rodgers and Mahomes?
Wow, this is a fun question. Oh man, now I really want to sit and think about that for a long time now.
Dang, did anybody Wes Welker? Both,
Wes Welker with Peyton Manning.
Welker's a good one.
Manning, Tom and Brady. Okay.
Yeah, Wes Welker.
Okay. Yeah, that's better.
That's a good one. A little bit. Good call by you, Ronan. Nice job.
Yeah. All right. So, food thought for another day. Okay. Anything else on this game from anybody? I think we're ready to roll on. Good game from both teams, and I do think both teams have an excellent shot to expect that they can be back to where they want to be this year.
What's up, everyone? I'm here to tell you about the Simon Short Podcast. Every Thursday, I deep dive topics related to the NFL, pro hoops, pop culture, and more. Be sure to subscribe to the Simon Short Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, I'm Connor.
I'm Billy.
And I'm Austin.
And we're the host of the Tricky Takes podcast presented by the Box Score Network.
We talk about all things sports ranging from golf, baseball, football, NBA, and all college sports.
Come give us a listen and make sure you follow us over on Twitter at Tricky Takes. And that's tricky with two I's.
A less pleasant section, but just uber important because of the implications for all these teams is the injury section. One we hit every week. So the Bengals, of course, quarterback Joe Burrow, wrist for the season. Ronan, I'm going to let you start this off because there was a little bit of weirdness. I don't know if you want to address the weirdness or not, but that's kind of your category. And then we'll just talk about some of the implications falling out too, man.
I'm going to stay away from the weirdness, and I'll okay, let you two maybe – what's the word I'm looking for here? Conspiracize. That's not
it. We'll do it.
I like that. We'll no, I like that
conspiracize.
One. Yeah.
We'll roll with conspiracize.
I have some other conspiracies for later. So this is great.
Oh,
let me get my tinfoil hat on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I need to go grab mine. Joe Burrow, obviously out for the season. It seemed like whenever he was hurt, the hope was, okay, it's just like a sprain in his finger. You know, we'll see him again in a week or two. Clearly not the case. Seems like a torn ligament. That kills Cincinnati's playoff hopes, and it's a sucky end of the season, obviously, for Burrow. He started off the season shaky, recovering from last year's injury, or not injury, just recovering, I guess, from
training
life
camp,
in general.
The training camp injury.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thank you. life in general. But shaky start to the beginning of the season, then seemed like he kind of caught his stride halfway through the season, maybe a little bit before then, and then, you know, season pretty much up in smoke. I don't think Jake Browning, I had to look down, by the way, at my notes to make sure that I got his name right, Jake Browning. I don't think he's going to be leading this high-powered offense to a playoff appearance. And you know what? Maybe they do. That would be a fun story, but it's going to be a tough road as they're 5-5 and kind of duking it out for that wild card spot, as the Ravens are starting to run away with it, Simon.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned it, Ronan, the injury and to the calf for Joe Burrow. And finally working his way back. I mean, we talked about that 49ers game that they won on October 29th, that 31-17 win. And then, you know, kind of came back down to earth slightly against the Bills. But, you know, you beat the Bills. You have the shootout with the Texans. It felt like that 49ers game was the absolute peak. And we did say on that week's episode, schematically, it just might have been like the perfect crossroads kind of deal. But I mean, look, they were on a roll. They were playing against good offenses and keeping up the score. But this just is going to be chalked up to one of those years from hell for one of these great teams, right? That happens. It didn't happen after their Super Bowl loss to the Rams, right? They were right back in it last season. I had predicted the Super Bowl hangover last year, and it didn't come. And you know, T. Higgins has been banged up all year. Joe Burrow obviously starts out in training camp with the calf injury. The defense has had guys kind of in and out dealing with stuff. Trey Hendrickson, Sam Hubbard on the edges. And, you know, this happens sometimes. You know, you're one of these teams that goes deep into the playoffs every year. Guys are banged up and, you know, stuff happens. And it is a bummer because, like you said, felt like the Bengals as a team were also going to be making a final push here to try to get into the playoffs. But even coming into this game against the Ravens, it was going to be tough, even if Burrow had stayed healthy, in a loss, because they are 1-5 in the AFC, 0-3 in the AFC North, just 5-5 on the season now. And Ben, it doesn't look like they're going to climb their way out of this.
No, it doesn't. And I don't think they're going to. I mean, I honestly think just losing Burrow, period, deflates them. They won't say that, of course. I just think when you lose somebody as good as Burrow, just like when the Colts or the Patriots lost Brady or Manning, or when the Chiefs lose Mahomes at some point, which will happen at some point somewhere, you know, in some season.
I knocked
on
wood,
deflating.
Everybody, don't worry.
Yeah, not this year. You know, it's just so deflating to lose somebody that good. I mean, everybody else knows that you kind of don't have a chance. Devil's advocate here for a second, looking at the Bengals schedule, I just went ahead and pulled it up. So they've got the Steelers twice, which the Steelers, you know, defensively aren't a whole lot better than Cincinnati at this point, still struggling to score. So, I mean, that might be elimination games right there between those two teams. If they split them or if somebody catches two of them, that could be the difference in the playoffs. They're not going to win at Jacksonville or at Kansas City. The Bengals aren't. So let's just call those two losses. The Colts game is very winnable for the Bengals. There's no question about it. The Vikings game, they're probably a dog, but they're playing at home, so they might could pull that game out conceivably. And then you have Cleveland again. So, again, Cleveland not going to score a lot of points either, but you got the defense. So that's going to be a tight slugfest. It's not inconceivable that the Bengals work their way into that 7 seed, but it's not likely either. Ronan?
No, I completely agree. And, you know, just Simon, like you mentioned, it's a season from hell for this Burrow-led Bengals team, or now Burrow-less Bengals team. I guess we can hit the other side.
Quick for me on the Bengals. I guarantee you Jake Browning will fall into a win against the Steelers in one of those two games. It's just going to happen, and I'm going to be miserable. Steelers Twitter update for you guys. Down bad this week, real bad. And when the Burrow news came out, pretty much everybody on Steelers Twitter, this was even before the game on Sunday, was just like, well, we're going to lose one of those games. Like, it's just, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. So that's not great. Another thing, chalk one up to the football gods, man. We all knew that the Bengals should have put Burrow on the pup list as soon as that calf injury came down, or at least should have just held him out for two games, not even done anything with him roster-wise.
Right.
We knew it on this pod. We said it. Pods all across the world were saying it. Everyone knew, right? And it didn't look like it was going to pay off in the negative for them as they were, you know, figuring some stuff out midway through the season. Chalk went up to the football gods. They came for him. They should have arrested the guy. Ben?
Yeah, Rona, go ahead.
Yeah, so on Thursday night, obviously, Burrow got hurt, but it was against the Ravens, who also are dealing with an injury as well. Tight end Mark Andrews seems like he might be out for the season, definitely heading to IR with an ankle injury. It did not look good, and he is obviously a crucial part of that offense, guys. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know he's a leading receiver for them in some way, for a pretty decent passing offense at that. The Ravens are, I believe, top rushing team in the league right now, and they have a solid passing attack to pair with that. So it's going to be interesting to see who kind of steps up and takes that number one target role for Baltimore, because – you know, they've got old Odell Beckham Jr., not to call him old or not trying to imply anything here, but he's not necessarily what he used to be. And then the rookie Zay Flowers, who, you know, has, you know, shown flashes so far this season. And then obviously Isaiah Likely, you know, is he likely to take a bigger role? See what I did there. But Ben, I'll kick it to you and get your thoughts on the Ravens situation.
So for me personally, for the Ravens, I'm not worried about regular season any longer, because it kind of sort of looks like they maybe have this division on cruise control and they might work their way into a nice 2 or 3 seed, you know. I'm not worried about that. But playing the AFC playoffs or even a Super Bowl without Mark Andrews, I think, is a big problem. I really do. I think that's been Lamar's number one receiving option for years and years now. And he is, we all know, one of the best tight ends in football. And that's going to worry me. Now, the only reason I still think the Ravens have a very good chance is because we mentioned it. All the other teams got flaws, too. The two teams we watched tonight got plenty of flaws for people to try to work on. So, I mean, I still don't think we can count the Ravens out for Super Bowl at all. But it's a big worry for me. Simon?
Yeah, I actually think this Ravens offense this year is much better built to withstand this injury. It's a much more normal style offense that utilizes different concepts and routes and players. And, you know, Patrick Ricard isn't running like the fourth most routes on the team anymore. There's just like more stuff going on that can actually be relied upon. So I agree with you, Ben, in terms of like the regular season, this is going to be fine. Mark Andrews has his, you know, difficulty with drops in bigger moments and has had that be a concern. So I don't know if I'm so worried about the big game aspect when it comes to playoff time, but that's assuming that somebody is going to have to step up. Because Ronan, you're right. Andrews leads the team in touchdowns by far. He has 6. I think Zay Flowers is 2nd with 3. He's the number one receiver tight end in success rate from a receiving standpoint. He's also 2nd in catches and yards behind Zay Flowers. I think Zay Flowers can be that kind of go-to guy through the regular season. And then this is where in the playoffs, that $15 million 4-void-year contract for Odell Beckham Jr. is going to have to pay off. He's going to have to show that he can be 2 years ago Rams postseason big play, consistent guy. I can give it to you big for 4 games. And that's why you pay him that money, other than just making Lamar Jackson happy. I like structurally, because of the game plan, because of the way they run the offense now, all of that is there for them. But it's just about, okay, yeah, when it comes to the playoffs, who is going to be that guy? And maybe it is Isaiah Likely. Maybe he does what he did in those four games, 2 years ago now, and just really, really pops off for the rest of the year. But somebody is going to have to take that role, and I think they have a guy in there that'll do that. It's just a matter of, does it happen? Ronan?
No, I completely agree. And I didn't realize that Zay Flowers has been such a big part of the Ravens' offense so far this year. That Ravens' offense, Ben, you love to give them credit. They've been rolling so far this year, and it's going to be fun to see how they finish it out. Ben, I'll go ahead and kick it to you for our next topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So the 49ers injury to safety. Actually, I'm going to peel back here and catch one of the big ones that I missed. Let's catch these small ones here. The Browns quarterback, Deshaun Watson, shoulder out for the season. And along with that, the Browns have gone ahead and signed quarterback Joe Flacco. Simon, I'll let you hit it first.
Yeah, I mean, obviously huge, huge news when it came out, and he basically played the second half of last week's game against the Ravens with not only that high ankle sprain that we knew about coming out of the game that we talked about, but we find out that this shoulder injury happened at some point in the first quarter. I believe this is the same shoulder that he had been dealing with the injury for all season. That was rotator cuff. This is more, I think, the bone on top of the shoulder. But either way, like, the shoulder has been messed up all year long. Just kind of continuing to pile on to the, like, what are the Browns doing? How is this going? I do think this is obviously less of an issue than, like, Joe Burrow for the Bengals, right? Because this team had been winning with the defense. Watson had only had one or two, like, really productive games between, you know, his injuries and then on-field struggles. The team did go to fifth-round rookie Dorian Thompson-Robinson for the game against the Steelers instead of P.J. Walker. And then we see them bring in Joe Flacco, who I assume is going to start sometime in the next two games and get his shot at this. Maybe give DTR one more game and see what it looks like. I mean, it was meh against the Steelers, but, you know, he did just enough to win the game. So that'll be interesting to see. It is less of a big deal. I don't think this fully kicks the Browns out of playoff contention based on where they already were, but it is going to be that much more of a difficult climb, I think, for them, depending on how the rest of the AFC kind of shakes out. But they're 7-3 right now, 5-2 in the conference. That's really going to help them. They're 3-2 in the AFC North. I don't expect too much of a slip from them going from Watson to whatever this DTR, Joe Flacco, PJ Walker combination is. And it's just so funny, man. Joe Flacco, I mean, come on. Like, this is, we're going to get to the Jets, but, man, the fact that the Browns are calling up Joe Flacco in week 11 and the Jets never went back to him, we'll get to that. But, Ronan, what do you think about this injury for Watson and the Browns?
I agree with you, and I think it's interesting that we're not necessarily, Ben, I don't want to speak for you, but we're not necessarily, you know, off of the Browns after this, right? Where, you know, we just talked about the Bengals and, you know, we kind of thought about, you know, there is a way for them to, but, like, we're not, like, off of the Browns like we are the Bengals, at least to that extent, at least for me personally. So it's interesting, you know, this big money quarterback who's getting all the guaranteed money compared to, you know, a rookie quarterback who's in his first year. Obviously he's a rookie, or Joe Flacco, who's, you know, in his 50th year. It's interesting to see the consensus on Deshaun Watson so far this year. But, you know, the Browns have won without him before this year. They did on Sunday. So yeah, I'm not too worried about it, I guess. It's going to be interesting to see how Watson, he looks in the future, because I don't know how many more years he can look like he did this year before the Browns cut ties, at least whenever they're able to. I don't even know if financially that's even possible ever. But Gosh, it's going to be really, really fun to watch Deshaun Watson try to figure this out, I guess. Ben?
They can cut ties whatever they want to, but Ronan, you alluded to it. Financially, that's going to be one heck of a messy divorce, man. You talk about expensive. Good gosh, they'll be cap crippled for a couple of seasons when they do it. But, I mean, obviously he'll be back next year. They'll give him another run at it. But how many more seasons will they put up with this kind of return on investment, right? We'll see. What is interesting here, the AFC teams, NFC too, but especially the AFC, how many of them are beat up, banged up, limping to the finish line here, man? In the AFC, there's probably four excellent teams, another fifth hopeful. You got the Bills doing whatever the Bills are doing. And then for that seventh seed, you've got like six or seven teams that are just bad offense, beat the crap, trying to come back like the Broncos. I mean, it's a fascinating group. One of them's going to get in. And why not the Cleveland Browns, who are already sitting there at 7-3? I mean, you know, Simon mentioned some of the tiebreaker stuff they've already got going on there. So the Cleveland's sitting okay right now, quarterback notwithstanding, Simon.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this team is going to win it with the defense, and it's still just a smothering defense. I mean, just completely does whatever it wants. Right now in DVOA, it's first overall, first against the pass, first against the run. I mean, they can do whatever they want. They can rush with the four down linemen. And Myles Garrett can wreck you. They can send blitzers. They have like three starting legitimate, like probably the best trio of corners in the NFL, I would say. And that's going to win them games by itself. And they just need the quarterback to not mess it up for them, basically. And you know, if you're in a game where you need a little more offense, you've got Amari Cooper to lean on, and you've got one of the best O-lines in the league. This run game has still been pretty effective, even without Nick Chubb. And like I said, the in and out play of the quarterback situation anyways isn't really affecting it. So it's been a pretty good run game. They're just operating from a much better starting point in terms of going to a backup quarterback than the Bengals were, who have also had their struggles on defense as well as offense and a much worse record to start. So it's going to be defense that wins it first. It might just be enough to hold on to a playoff spot, I'd say, Ben.
Yeah, and if I had to predict right now, that's what I would predict, because you look, I mean, they're competing with the Broncos and the Raiders and the Steelers. I mean, you know, I don't know that I would pick any of those other teams to overtake the Browns necessarily, although, you know, it could certainly happen. So, all right, Ronan, I'm going to let you hit the next section of injuries, your section, and then kick it over to Simon, and we'll work our way through the rest of this.
Yes, sir. So the Rams and Seahawks went head-to-head on Sunday, and unfortunately for both teams, they dealt with injuries to some pretty high-profile guys. Kenneth Walker, running back for Seattle, is dealing with an oblique injury. Pete Carroll said, I believe today, that he doesn't think it will be IR-worthy, so that's something to monitor, hopefully. You know, he's back within the next week or two. IR, for those of you who don't know, if you're placed on IR, you're out for the next 4 weeks. No matter what. So that means that the window is, you know, before 4 weeks. The Seahawks also are dealing with a Geno Smith injury, starting quarterback, dealing with a tricep injury. It seems like he's up in the air for next week, but it should not be longer than that. That's at least the hope. But, you know, with these types of things, you just have to wait and see the results. And then finally, Cooper Kupp for the Rams, wide receiver, missed some time earlier this season with an ankle injury. It's been, I believe it's the same ankle. It's been re-aggravated. He's listed as day-to-day. He should be okay. But, you know, with his history, I would not be surprised if they went ahead and played it safe and he missed the next week, maybe even two. But, yeah, that is a few. You know what? I'll go ahead and hit the Funga ACL tear, just so I can hit all of the NFC West. But, you know, Hufanga, safety for the 49ers, he's a very, very big part of that defense. He has great instincts, and unfortunately, he tore his ACL on Sunday, and he will be out for the season. I don't think it's going to be something that will necessarily break this defense. I don't think they're going to plummet because of it. But I think they'll feel the effects of it. Like I said, he's got a great knack for the ball where it's going to be. And he comes up big time after time. So That's the NFC West news, guys. Simon, I'll go ahead and kick it to you, and you can take it wherever you want.
Yeah, I'll just quickly say for Ifunga that it'll be interesting because it's been a thin defensive backfield that's dealt with some injuries for the 49ers. Do they get the rookie Jair Brown into it a little bit more? Do they get some of the other veterans like an Ambry Thomas or George Odom, someone else who gets involved there? We've seen the defense have its struggles this year, so it'll be interesting to see what they do. The other one I want to hit is another thin defensive backfield, and it's the Buffalo Bills. In that game against the Jets, cornerback Teron Johnson, the standout nickel corner, he suffered a concussion. We've seen almost everybody that deals with a concussion be out for at least one game. It's already a thin defensive backfield, as I said. Taylor Rapp also went out in that game. He had to get stretchered out and go to a hospital, but everything is A-okay. He went back home either that night or the next morning. He's okay. From a bigger than football standpoint, I assume with the neck injury is what they're calling it, he would also be out for a week. And he was starting to play in some line, like in sort of a linebacker role a little bit in that game against the Jets, like we had talked about preseason. But the Bills continuing to take some hits in the defensive backfield. Should say Rasul Douglas, though, the corner they traded for from the Packers, he's made a play. He's made plays and been a standout every single week that he's been out there for them. Got a couple big tackles and an interception in this past game. So we'll continue to see, you know, for the Bills as they try to figure this thing out, how the injuries kind of pile up. Ben, what other injuries do you want to hit?
One other injury that I will hit, and then I want to touch on the Seahawks really quick because of the injury that they've mentioned. Joey Bosa has an injury. Give me 1 second. I'm gonna peel back over there to our doc. Joey Bosa's got the foot, likely going to IR, which again, as Ronan mentioned, will put him at 4 weeks out. For a struggling Chargers team that is 4-6 and has just continued to look sick, you know, I continue to struggle with everything they're going on with. So this is not going to help them at all. I did want to touch on the Seahawks. This is a bad time for them to be struggling with injuries because they're 6-4. They just came off a brutal Rams loss. That is a brutal way to lose a game to a team that you're pretty sure you're better than, division rival no less. Coming up on the schedule, they've got the 49ers. Then they're at the Cowboys. Then they're at the 49ers again. Then they have the Eagles. Then they get an off week against the Titans. Then they go play the Steelers, or at home against the Steelers, and then they finish up with the hapless Cardinals. So it may not matter because the NFC is so divided right now. There's like 7 legit playoff teams, and everybody else is crap right now. So it may not matter as far as making the playoffs. But the Seattle right now, it's a bad time to be struggling with injuries. They may take a couple of L's here on the schedule, and it may just knock them down in terms of seeding. So instead of being somewhere around 5 or even, you know, catch a 3 if they were to actually win the division, which a couple of weeks ago was a possibility, now you're looking at slipping to 6th or 7th. Not a great spot if you actually want to make a Super Bowl run, which I think Seattle thought they could a couple of weeks ago. So just stuff to keep an eye on there. All right, before we hit our next segment, anything else here on the injury stuff? All right, let's move on to the next stuff, our new section. Ken Dorsey, offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, has been let go last week, just a day or so after we actually got off the air here on our podcast. So a lot of people have been talking about it all week. It's our turn to talk about it. Simon, you get first stab.
Yeah, man, I was kicking myself when that news came through because as I was coming downstairs from the game, just thinking about it, I was like, man, could we see Ken Dorsey go, right? All the clips of, like, we were getting all the replays of him just, like, throwing all his stuff around, right, just after the game, not even before he got fired. So it was like, that was fresh in my mind. And, you know, I was thinking about, like, okay, what are we going to say on the pod? What are we going to talk about? We've talked about the Bills so many weeks. And I was like, why can't this stuff get through to Josh Allen that he can't make these throws, right? And I know so much of it is part of what he does. You take the highs with the lows, but like, it's like right now you got to do something else. You got to do something else. You got to do something. And I know the uproar of this firing between everybody. It's not just like one section of football Twitter. It's like it's the meme of the like hands like meeting in the middle where it's like analytics Twitter is like, they're second in EPA and third in points and first in success rate and all this stuff. The offense is great. And then, you know, like old school football Twitter is like, oh, this is the guy that like coached him up like when he got there, not just Brian Daboll. And they're one of the best offense. And like it's not Ken Dorsey's fault that they have 12 men on the field and that receivers were driving passes. And I get all that. But that is those are reactionary thoughts to it's just this game that's the issue. And I know that's the way it feels, right? It's Sean McDermott having an embarrassing loss and saying, I have to fire somebody. But what happens behind the door, you know, I always say like so much of coaching we don't see. And so much of the meetings that the coaches are having when they have these bad losses, they're on the team plane after and McDermott's looking at Dorsey. And he's like, we can't have Allen continue to do this stuff. Dorsey's like, oh, I'll talk to him. We'll figure it out. We'll get in the meeting room, yada. And then McDermott probably goes and sits in on a lot of those meetings, but he's probably a few more over the last few weeks. And he's just like, we're saying the same thing over and over again. Or, you know, Dorsey says we can't do this. Allen says, okay, I won't do that. And then he does it. And at some point we see this part where the coaching just gets stale. You hear the same thing for so long. And it's why we see good head coaches with teams that are, you know, mildly struggling get fired. And it's like, hey, sometimes they, right, they lose the locker room, right? They lose the ear of everybody. They need a fresh voice. That happens with coordinators. And Allen had all those crazy plays that he's had all season. It feels like it's happening over a longer stretch than it's happened in the past. And this is, what, Allen's fourth year with Ken Dorsey, right there over his shoulder. And it, stuff happens, man. And, like, we got to figure something out. This is put up or shut up time at 5-5. So, no, the offense doesn't look demonstrably different, right? The play calling doesn't look all that different. I think there might have been a few more runs and a few more plays to James Cook and some short stuff to get things open before launching it deep. But it doesn't look very extremely different. And it's not going to Joe Brady, which I'm so upset because he's going to be the new OC. And I was really hoping he'd make his way to Pittsburgh next year. But sometimes you just need a new voice in the air. Sometimes you need a new guy just calling the plays, right? To listen to. We'll see if it works. But I think I can see how the dots connect from a coaching standpoint. Ronan, what did you think of this move?
You know, I was not expecting Ken Dorsey to get fired before Matt Canada. That was not on my bingo card. God,
that's tough. It's, yeah.
That I was not ready for that. But I don't know. My initial thought was that this was kind of a scapegoat sort of deal, truthfully, because there were bigger issues at hand. I mean, Allen has thrown 12 interceptions, which I believe is a league leading, or at least tied, because I think Howell has 12 as well. But yes, the offense has been kind of hit or miss at times, but I just don't think that pointing to Dorsey and saying this has been the problem, you know, you need to go right now. It's just the timing didn't feel right. I mean, I personally didn't like, or I understand it, but I just don't think now is the time as you're, you know, I believe 500 or around that area and trying to make your way back to it. Cutting ties with your offensive coordinator. Typically, that's a move done by a team that's, you know, not going to be making the playoffs. I'm pretty sure we're all going to sit around here and say, hey, I think the Bills have a really good shot at the playoffs. Even though last week we were talking about, you know, the possibility of them not making it, right? So, you know, maybe they don't. But I don't know. That seems almost like a we kind of give up sort of vibe, at least from the organization. I know that the team isn't adopting that mentality, but all in all, not the biggest fan of it. Sure, a change might have needed to have been made, but I just didn't like the timing. Ben?
Yeah, to me, this is a scapegoat desperate move. But I don't blame the Bills for doing it, man. Because listen, if you don't do something, I think we all like McDermott, and I think Buffalo likes McDermott. But if he doesn't do something, he's next out the door. I mean, I know they just signed extensions this past offseason. That doesn't stop when ownership decides, hey, this just isn't working. And when the front office starts to get a little itchy and say, hey, it's not us, it must be the coaching staff, then guess who's out the door? It's the head coach. So I don't blame McDermott for doing this because, I mean, it is what it is. It's no different than Vrabel having a power struggle with his general manager over in Tennessee. At a certain time, you just get to where, hey, somebody's got to go, and I don't want it to be me. So here, let's kick Josh Allen in the pants a little bit. Let's get a little different voice in his ear. Let's try to show ownership that we are serious about doing something. So I'm okay with it, even though to me it is an obvious scapegoat desperate move. And listen, I don't think that Josh Allen is the same in 22 and 23 that he was in 21. And I know statistically it's almost identical. I get that. But to me, there's just a different version of Allen that we're seeing. It's more wild. It's less focused. It's almost like the kid on ADD or ADHD without his meds, right? I mean, that's kind of how it feels. The interceptions are a little bit more ridiculous consistently. A lot of this yardage is getting racked up, you know, in inconsistent ways. It's getting racked up with the Bills from playing from behind instead of playing from ahead, as opposed to, say, some of the 2021 games when we saw some of his best play. It feels different under Dorsey as the OC than it did under Dable as the OC, even though Dorsey was there as the QB coach. It feels different, even though statistically I get it. It's very, very eerily similar. I get it. But it does feel different. So I'm okay with Dorsey going, even though, listen, McDermott's trying to save his old self here too. Let's not be unclear about that part of it. Simon?
Yeah, I mean, I think the three of us just covered all three bases kind of the thoughts on this, right? All wrong, all right, somewhere in the middle. Like at the end of the day, is it really going to make a difference this season? I don't know. Probably not. We'll see how many interceptions Josh Allen throws or if it seems to be a little bit more under control. But yeah, just thought that was interesting. Obviously, there's been a lot of discourse of it already through the week, but wanted to make sure we touched on it a bit because I just always feel like that we only see the front facing stuff and we see the scapegoat stuff and that we see the stats and the film and like all of that stuff is important, but like the stuff behind the scenes of like just what those guys are saying, man, we're missing that. And you know what? I'll just turn my attention to the Steelers trying to get Ken Dorsey this offseason instead. You know, listen, Josh Allen, when they brought in Ken Dorsey, had been 2 years in and it was really bad. Kenny Pickett, 2 years in. Really? I'm just kidding, guys. I'm just kidding. Everybody calm down. Calm down.
I will say I don't think you're wrong about voices, Simon, and getting tired, because I don't think it's any different than having a teenager who won't listen to his parents, but he'll listen to somebody else say the exact same thing. And the parents are like, we've been telling him that for 2 years. He just won't hear it from us. So it could be that Dorsey's making the right play calls and saying the right things, and Allen's just not listening to it. We've kind of wondered about that this entire season. It's, hey, are these Bills decisions or these Allen decisions? You know, and I'm not totally sure we'll ever know, but it kind of feels like, hey, some of this is big kid Allen here just needing to get reeled in a little bit. And so maybe Dorsey's not doing anything wrong. It's just not – he's not speaking Allen's language. It could be that simple. So I don't think you're off track with that at all, Simon.
Should we hit another struggling AFC East quarterback?
Let's do it, man. All right. Zach Wilson benched from the New York Jets. Some people wanted it a lot sooner. It has finally happened. We'll see if it stays that way. Simon, what do you think? Is it going to stay this way, or is Zach going to be back in soon?
It's got to stay this way, man. It has to. It absolutely has to. And I said everything I said about the Kyler Murray, what I thought was going to happen with that situation, I was dead wrong. Every part of me is screaming that Saleh is going to mess this up again and go back to him in 3 weeks. But buddy, it just can't happen. At the beginning of the season, I did all the stats of, you know, how Zach Allen was essentially the worst quarterback in the league last year. Going to Aaron Rodgers would be such an improvement. On the Simon Short podcast for this week's episode, I went through the same thing again. And for all of this year's stats so far, and it's the same thing. It's to say he's in the bottom three of every single category that you could name that's important. This is so far late, and I just can't believe it took this long. Guys, Saleh shaved his beard again, by the way. Let me get back on this train. I've been tracking this. You change your beard midseason as a coach, you change your facial hair, something's wrong. You change it back a second time. Whoo, buddy, that's real bad look. Did you guys notice that Sunday Night Football, we'll talk about it, head ref, I already forgot his name, he grew a goatee since the last game I saw him on. I checked on Twitter. I made sure because he looks completely different. Looks good on him. Good look. I think for refs, good. For coaches, bad. Twitter was approving. I'll get his name before we get to Sunday Night Football. But here's my – I mentioned a conspiracy theory. Here's my conspiracy theory for why Zach Wilson was the quarterback this whole time and they didn't go do something else. So we have all the news about Aaron Rodgers, right? He's sending his teammates videos of him working out. He's on the sideline with the headset. He's targeting December 3rd for starting to practice again, December 16th for playing it, whatever it was. Aaron Rodgers made Rob Saleh keep Zach Wilson as quarterback. So this team would be out of playoff contention by mid-December. And he can say, you know, I'm healthy enough to come back, but we're out of it. So I'm just going to wait till next year, even though he had no chance, whatever night that was, September, whatever, Thursday, Monday night, Thursday, whenever that game was, a season opener. When he went down, he knew he was done for the season, but he was like, I got to spin this the right way, man. How do I make this narrative work out for me? I can come back this year. Saleh, you remember that 20 mil I gave back to the team? You remember how I actually came here? You want me to come back next season? You put Zach Allen, whatever his name is, I don't even remember anymore, Zach Wilson in. We tank the season, ensure I don't have to come back, and I'll give you 2 more years. All right? How's that sound? Now, it doesn't matter because Saleh's going to get fired at the end of the season. Anyways, but yeah, Aaron Rodgers did this. This is all because look, Zach Wilson's third on the depth chart now. He's not even the backup going into next week. He's third on the depth chart. This is the only reasonable explanation I can come up with. Ronan, what do you think about this?
I don't know about all that. I don't know. I think Zach Wilson just struggled, and Bob Saleh is done with it, and that's why. Is it Nick or Tim Boyle? Yeah, it's a Boyle. And Boyle, Trevor Boyle. Siemian are the QBs 1 and 2. So, in hindsight, definitely should have gotten an alternative quarterback whenever Rodgers went down. Was PJ Walker available?
I think he might have been on the Browns practice squad to start the season. Yeah.
I mean, just something, man. Something. Just as like Joe Flacco solid just went to the QB Browns. Too.
He was on your team for 2 years. Yeah. Just
something. Zach Wilson, it seems like it's the end of the road. He might get like a backup opportunity, but it seems like his chances at, you know, getting starter recognition are over. Ben, yeah, I'll kick it to you.
Yeah, so Zach Wilson really honestly should have been benched weeks ago. By the way, I love the Aaron Rodgers take. I mean, that's entirely possible, right? Crazier things have happened behind closed doors. I mean, seriously. But Zach Wilson, I love him to death. I love the way he's handled it this year as opposed to some of the stuff he did last year. He's handled it well, but he's just not getting it done. He's not even close to getting it done. Aside from what, that one, basically two quarters against the Kansas City Chiefs, It's been really ugly, and it just kind of wrenches you. It drains you emotionally as a fan, as a defense, as a wide receiver, you name it. It's draining to watch this guy keep going back out there and look really awful for the most part. You know, you catch a play here and there, a quarter here and there, and it's it. They can't score enough to win. And you got to put somebody else in, whether it's Siemian or Boyle, or, you know, maybe they should have gone after Joe Flacco again like the Browns did. You got to do something else here. You got to stir the pot. It really should have been done weeks ago. Some people have mentioned, and I wonder, did the Jets front office just not want to give up so quickly on such a high-profile pick that makes them kind of look bad? Because, you know, we all know that Jets owner Woody Johnson, he does things a little weird sometimes too, and he might be looking sideways at that front office and saying, hey, you guys are out the door too. So there's a lot of stuff going on there. Who knows what's really happening, but the Zach Wilson thing needed to happen. So I think Jets people everywhere are excited that, hey, we're at least trying something different here. And it may not end in any more wins, but still, we got to do something here. All right. Anything else on Zach Wilson? Any more conspiracy theories from anybody? Okay. No, we got enough. All right. So Desmond Ridder is back as the starter for the Atlanta Falcons. And Ronan, I'll let you take first crack at it and kick it over to Simon.
You know, Ridder has he's had a few opportunities so far this season to kind of cement his himself as the Falcons QB1 for the foreseeable future, and he hasn't necessarily deserved that role for the future. Now he still has this back stretch of the season to kind of prove himself, and the Falcons have the weapons to, you know, do something offensively between Bijan, between Kyle Pitts, between Drake London. They have a lot of skill guys that haven't necessarily been used to their fullest extent. You know, you'd like to see Ridder hopefully connect with one of those guys. But I don't know. I was big on this Falcons team coming into the season. They've just let me down for the most part. I wasn't the biggest on Ridder, so I can kind of hold on to that, you know, maybe with a different quarterback, things would look a little bit different, but I don't know. I'm also starting to question just head coach Arthur Smith kind of in general as well, because it's become a meme at this point, but it's true. It's legit. The stars on this team don't get the ball, but the third string tight end will, you know, get the big play whenever it matters most. So I don't know. I'm starting to kind of get out on the Falcons, but maybe Ridder, you know, lighting it up can bring me back. Simon?
Yeah, I will say I kind of there's one little hang up in here, although I'm trying to catch up on some reporting about to try to ease my concerns about it. Here's what I liked from the process standpoint. They stuck with Ridder for what, seven, eight games, I believe, as the starter. Showed some good things, but also showed some like crippling turnover issues for a team that's trying to win games right now. They go to Heinicke in the middle of a game. They Heinicke starts for two games. Ridder ends up finishing out this last game that they played before their bye week, when Heinicke went out with a hamstring injury. But when the news came out today on Monday that Ridder was going to be the starter, Arthur Smith, I believe it was, gave a quote that was like, "Hey, we knew Ridder was struggling. We had some things we wanted to work on with him. We put him to the bench so he could basically like reset and work on the things. And now we feel coming out of the bye week, he's ready to start again." Now there's a bit of a hang up in that Heinicke got hurt. So like, if Heinicke didn't get hurt, would we? Like, was it in those six passes that he threw in the game that Heinicke got hurt that he saw, like, oh, everything's good now? Was this now? Some of the reporting I'm reading here is that, like, people believe that this was always kind of the plan, the thought. But this goes to Ronan's point that Arthur Smith has been so demonstrative in all these press conferences all year. It's hard to fully buy into the fact that this was a plan, because this would have been a really good plan. I like this idea. Like, there's so much pressure to get quarterback right, and the quarterback you put in has to be the guy, and if he's not, you better get the next guy in. That I think if you have a young quarterback, especially one that was a mid-round pick, if you want to bench him for a couple games, not as a punishment, but to say, hey, you have stuff we need to work on, so let's work on those things in practice and put you back out there when you're ready again. It's almost like dealing with an injury, right? Take a couple weeks off to save you for the long run. That would be great. The little voice in the back of my head, though, is saying, if Heinicke never got hurt, would this have happened? So I like this process in theory. I'm not ready to give Arthur Smith Coach of the Year award for that. Everybody knows I'm a Ridder guy, though, so I'm happy to see him get another shot. And if let's say the turnovers are cleaned up the back half of the year, let's say he has half as many turnovers in the second half of the year than he did the first half, then we'll be able to look back and say, hey, that was probably right, and that's good process. If it's not any better, then, you know, maybe we don't believe that as much. But that was my take on it. That was why I wanted to get in on it. Ben, I know you have some Falcons thoughts, man. What do you got?
Yeah, listen, I didn't have any problems with Arthur Smith before this season, but I have a lot now. I just really don't like the way he's handled a lot of his conversations and the way he's presented a lot of the stuff. And honestly, I think if I don't like it, I don't think a lot of his team is going to like it either. Because a lot of it, you just like, are we that stupid to actually buy into this? So now listen, I didn't like the way that Kyle Pitts wasn't getting as many touches as I thought he deserved last year. Seemed to kind of go into this year as well, so I didn't like that. But you go back to the Bijan Robinson thing a few weeks ago where he was sick but not sick, so we stuck him in for a play late in the game. As a decoy? I don't know. That whole thing was weird. Maybe he wasn't feeling good. But what Arthur Smith basically said, we just looked at him, we could tell he wasn't right. It was kind of the way Smith sold it to everybody. But then if that was true, why stick him in late in the game at all? That whole thing was weird. So I didn't like that. That came across as a little weird. Disingenuous is the word I'm inclined to use. Then the Ridder thing. I thought they should have left Ridder in. I flat out thought they should have left him in. And I'm not the hugest Ridder guy. But he had gotten pretty hot in terms of yardage. I know the interceptions and the fumbles there back-to-back weeks were tough. But in terms of yardage, there were 2 weeks there where he had almost 600 yards in terms of passing. And they were winning with him. They weren't winning by a lot, but they had a winning record with him in there. And I really liked the way he was starting to get comfortable with Drake London. He had a hookup there. Mm-hmm. He had a connection there. You could see consistently he was willing to go downfield to London and give 50-50 balls to London, knowing that London can pull him down. So I didn't think they should have taken him out. I thought they should have left him in. Let him take his lumps is really the way I thought he should have left it. But now you had the mysterious Ridder concussion. Well, I was watching that game against Tennessee. Nobody in the first half had any clue, not the announcers or the fans or anybody. There was no hit in the first half of that Titans game that gave any indication at all that Ridder had any problem at all. And then after the game, when Ridder was benched for the entire second half, then Arthur Smith starts to say things like, well, we just thought he might have had a concussion. We had him evaluated. Had nothing to do with his performance. He literally said, Arthur Smith said, he was not benched for his performance. And then Heinicke stays in for the next 2 weeks until Heinicke gets injured, as Simon, you alluded to. So you have to ask yourself, why is, you know, if Heinicke's not injured, does Heinicke still play? And now we're getting the idea, oh, it was the plan all along. This was the plan all along for Ridder to sit out a couple of weeks. And I'm telling you, it just comes across as more disingenuous. And I really think Arthur Smith is just making it up as it goes along, really, is what's happening here. And I don't think there is a grand plan. And I'm not even sure I'm not okay with that because, listen, job security is on the line here. If you're Arthur Smith and you have a bad season, you could be gone. I mean, you know, Falcons ownership may be looking at you and kicking you out the door. So I'm okay with the switch, even though I thought they should have left Ridder in. But, man, all this back and forth and some of those weird explanations for things that don't seem to fit, I'm not buying it. And I guarantee you, if he's doing that with us, he's doing that with his players too, and they're going to get tired of that. So that's going to be the real rub, is that his players aren't going to like that kind of disingenuity, to be quite honest about it. So to me, sloppily handled. Oh, by the way, they haven't won a game since Heinicke came in. So they've been playing okay, but they haven't won any games. They've been losing them instead. So, you know, that's my impression of it. Simon, anything else here on Falcons, Ridder, anything at all?
No, I mean, you kind of convinced me Arthur Smith probably is making up as it goes along. But still, as a concept, but, you know, take the young quarterback out as a planned, yeah, figure stuff out.
Yeah.
I like that as a plan. Hopefully some other coaches saw that and they're like, I know he's making that stuff up, but I'm going to try that one day. I like it.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, just come out and say it. Say, hey, we want to give our guy a couple weeks off. Even split series if you have to. I don't like splitting series, but, man, it should do something, you know, instead of saying, nah, he was benched for concussion. Which, by the way, he was immediately cleared to play in the second half of that game. He was cleared to play the following week, and they still kept him off. Like, there was no concussion issue at all. They just kind of passed that off as if, oh, that's why he's not playing. So, all right, we'll move off of that. Sunday Night Football. Entertaining game. The Broncos beat the Vikings 21-20. Ronan, first thoughts, man.
It was kind of one of those weird primetime games. You know, Will Lutz, I'm trying to pull it up here. Yeah, 5 for 5. So, you know, great night for him.
With Will Lutz stats.
Yeah, long of 52. He had 15 of Denver's 21 points. So, That's kind of what, no, but okay. Russell Wilson actually did look pretty decent. 27 of 35 for 259 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions. He was sacked twice. He was getting the Broncos into, you know, scoring position. It's just they couldn't pull through. So there's good and bad you can take away from that. Primarily, the Broncos could not run really at all. They 15 attempts, 46 yards for they had a long of 15 yards. So you take that away, and that's 14 attempts for 31 yards. Some quick math right there for you. And that's even worse. So not a great night on the ground, but Russ has continued to look okay. He's definitely improved from last year's Russ. He seems to be on kind of a hot streak, as does the team. But the defense was a huge part of this game, generating 3 turnovers, 2 fumbles, and an interception, keeping Minnesota out of the end zone. Now, on the Minnesota side of things, it seems like they're kind of missing Jay Jettas. I mean, I guess you're always going to miss your, premier wide receiver. So, take that with however much weight comes with it. But they were able to run, or they had a good game on the ground, 36 attempts for 175 yards. And that's something to keep an eye on moving forward. With Josh Dobbs at quarterback, you don't want to put all the weight on him. But, I mean, if they can get it going on the ground, they're more than likely going to be able to put up more than 20 points. That was a pretty solid Denver defense out there on Sunday night. So that's kind of quick takeaways from the Vikings-Broncos matchup, Simon.
Yeah, you hit the run game. That was the thing that I was paying the most attention to going into the game, other than just being just like dazzled, like Chris Collinsworth by Josh Dobbs, just like everything he does, just so much fun. And I'll get into Dobbs later. But the main thing from the game aspect, the matchup that I wanted to see, was actually weakness on weakness. I wanted to see, could this Vikings run game, which is one of the worst in the league, get going against this Broncos run defense, which is one of the worst in the league, right? Who was going to get right this week? And it was the Vikings run game. Ty Chandler looked really good. He was like hitting holes quick. He was redirecting really well. He was running through contact. Alexander Mattison, other than continuing the fumbling issue, he looked good as that like kind of thumper downhill kind of dude. But I thought Ty Chandler specifically looked really, really good. But yeah, 175 yards. Now, I don't know how well that's going to sustain. Kind of went back and watched them, and Collinsworth even said this on the broadcast. It's not like things were being like overly blocked really, really well. There was some good stuff happening, but nothing. It's not the Eagles or Lions run blocking offensive lines. I'll tell you that. So hopefully they can get to average the rest of the way. It's really going to help them as the season goes. But I do think this is more about that Broncos run defense. While the pass defense has gotten better the last few weeks, and overall they're hanging in there, this run defense is still struggling. So that was the first thing I really noticed. But then, yeah, man, Josh Dobbs, dude just doesn't get flustered. On that early touchdown pass, that rollout that he had where he shook off Jonathan Cooper, the edge rusher, just literally shrugged him off, stutter steps at the sideline, draws the next linebacker into him, and just like throws right around the guy for that touchdown. It hurt him later on, though, because he took the sack on the next drive that kind of ended their drive, forced them to kick a field goal. But Dobbs is just, he's fun to watch. And I think he's definitely a guy that, will probably finish the year out as the starter. I don't think any changes are going to happen. I don't think he's turning back into a pumpkin or anything like that. He seems to work well with Kevin O'Connell, and despite the loss, this is still a really fun Minnesota team, I would say, Ben.
This is my kind of game right here. It had a little bit of everything between two teams that were pretty evenly matched, and good feel-good stories here. It feels good to watch Denver fight their way back into something decent that we all kind of sort of thought we would see from Russell Wilson and Sean Payton. Even if you're not a Wilson fan, it's just fun to watch this team fight their way out of these deep holes they were in last year and early this season. The Vikings, the same thing, of course, with Josh Dobbs. This game had everything, man. He had the fake punts, punts. It had the 2-point conversions. It had fourth down decisions. It had turnovers. It had sacks. I mean, it had a little bit of everything between two evenly matched teams who both needed this win. And Denver actually pulls the thing out. Good for them. They really, really had to have this, and they did at home. It feels so good to watch this. And both of these teams have a good shot at being in the playoffs. I think Minnesota probably will be at this point. And Denver's just sitting there on the outside, kind of, looking for an opportunity to work their way in. This was such a fun game across the board. Y'all mentioned Russell Wilson continuing to play a little bit better each week or every couple of weeks. And then you mentioned that rushing game for the Vikings, which has been abysmal. They finally found the team they can run the football against, and they did, man. I mean, they did. So a little bit of everything. I loved it. That's all I got on this game. But, man, from start to finish, this game was just so fun. Ronan?
I completely agree, and I'm right there with you guys. I think the Broncos have a pretty solid shot at making a wild card appearance, especially with a team like the Bengals, you know, maybe getting out of that playoff picture. Door opens just a little bit more. And then, you know, we've mentioned time and time again, the NFC is relatively depleted. So, you know, the Vikings with Josh Dobbs isn't unheard of. And then, you know, you bring Jefferson back and, you know, that offense might not be too far off of what Kirk was doing because, you know, so far this year, I don't have the numbers pulled up in front of me, but, you know, Kirk was having a pretty solid year, but so was Dobbs, and on a worse team, you know, roster wise. So I don't know. This is going to be a fun storyline to keep up with because, I mean, Josh Dobbs is like, he works for NASA or something, right? And then he just like on the side, and then or is football on the side?
Part time.
Hourly. So I don't know. I love it though. I love it though, Simon.
Yeah, to give Denver a little more praise, you guys did a better job than me at that. I talked about this last week a little bit. They've become one of those teams that's just steady Eddie, where and it really is very much the way Ben described them in the playoff picture. They're just going to hang around the outside. They're not going to shoot themselves in the foot. It's how they play the game. I think they've had forced like 8 turnovers over the last 2 games or something like that, which is like the most in that time span, or maybe it's 3 games, whatever it is, like in their history or something. So you expect that to come down, but they win the turnover battle in this one 3-0. They score 9 of their points off of the Vikings' 3 turnovers. And again, just like I talked about with the Chiefs Eagles, like you just can't do that. You can't turn the ball over and then let the team score off of those turnovers, right? In what becomes a 1-point game. But the Broncos are just death by 1,000 paper cuts. This is old school Russ. This is, hey, I'm just going to kind of bob and weave, and I'm going to get a lot of completions early on. We might not score a lot of points, but when I need to let off a moon ball or I need to chuck it deep, I'm going to. And by the way, it's about time I came around on this. Cortland Sutton, A1 star. I mean, this guy right now should be in the running for an all-pro spot, I would say, and at the wide receiver position. That dude... I mean, that game when that last touchdown he had, where it's just like looked like he had no shot. I mean, he just climbs a ladder. He does it for a dude that says, I swear he's bigger than the like 6'4, 230 that he's listed at. That other deep shot that he had down the left sideline, he gets behind the corner and he gets down to the ground, right? So he uses his side size and his strides to get behind the corner, but then also the like dexterity to get down on the ground to make the catch. I had doubted these Broncos wide receivers for the last 2 years now. Sutton, I'm in on. Jerry Jeudy still got some work. He's doing his thing. He's fine. But Cortland Sutton, let's free that man. Let's get him on the Chiefs next year. Because he is a star, and I think he will continue to have a good season. And you know, he could still be a star in this offense with Russell Wilson, with Sean Payton. But very, very good outing by the Broncos. This is who they're going to be for the last 8 weeks, for the last 7 games. They're just going to hang around in every game and all season long and let you make the mistake. So if you go on a losing streak, they're going to be right there to try to take your playoff spot. If you turn the ball over a couple times, they're going to be right there to try to take advantage of it. Ben?
Vikings, interesting to note, Vikings came in on a 5-game winning streak. Broncos on a 3. Broncos leave with the 4-game winning streak intact. Not necessarily what you would associate with these two teams, and yet nobody else in any matchup this week had any winning streaks any bigger than that, going head-to-head like that. So fascinating game. Had everything you want. Fantastic game there. One segment we were going to do tonight, I'm going to push it to next week, so I'm going to let the audience know about it. What were the top 3 offenses you would want to have in the NFL? We're going to push that to next week. We instead have some Thanksgiving games we're going to play. And we're going to do that right after this break. Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker.
And I'm Robert Zinvier, and we are the Odds On Favorite, presented by BoxScore Network.
Every week, we analyze NFL point spreads, over-unders, props, futures, and much more.
Follow us on Twitter at Odds On Favorite, and listen on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hello everybody, Brandon Tim here, telling you all to listen to the Fantasy Football Franchise, a podcast giving you the insights to help you win your fantasy football leagues. Together, we will look at everything fantasy football, from the platforms we use to navigating weekly player projections. Listen to the Fantasy Football Franchise, a BoxScore Network podcast. We'll see you at the next episode.
All right, everybody, welcome back in. As Ben mentioned before the break, we are going to do a couple Thanksgiving-themed segments here. It is Thanksgiving week. Hope everybody has a great holiday. Everybody travels safely. Everybody does all the things you're supposed to do on Thanksgiving, and that's watch football and eat good food and, I guess, do it around some family or friends or somebody. I don't know. That part all just kind of drowns out at some point during the day. But we have a couple games we're going to play. First, we love a draft on this show. We love to draft whatever we can. Players in a mock draft, takes, team units, whatever it is. This week, we're going to draft Thanksgiving food items, mostly so we can yell at each other about our weird food preferences. But also, you know, just we're real excited to eat, man. I'm getting hungry right now. I have set no way to randomize this order or do anything. So we're just going to start with Ronan because he actually wrote down his draft board. I know Ben and I did not do that, so we'll give Ronan the edge there. Although he should probably go last since he actually wrote it down, but we'll reward him. So Ronan, give us your first pick. And we're just going to go till we like run out of really good things, I guess. And I don't know. We'll just see how this goes. But Ronan, I'm also putting all the pressure on you, man. What's the first thing? What's the number one pick in the Thanksgiving food item draft?
You're going to hate it, and I love it. With 1-1, we're taking stuffing, also known as dressing.
My man!
Okay. Never mind. Okay. Boy, I'll take it. Usually it's a hated on food, but
supremely underrated.
A good made stuffing is absolutely amazing. If you haven't had a good one, it's not the food's fault. It's the cook's fault.
I think you can even do the bad one. I think you can just open up the box, the stovetop box, and do that, and you'll be fine. You'll be fine. I agree with you, though. If you get like a real one, like it's peaks up. But man, it's one of those things you can't mess up, really. I mean, how do you mess it up? It's if you think you're gonna mess up the real one, spend $2 on the box of the box stuff, and you'll save the day. This is a great pick, Ronan. I'm extremely impressed. Ben, your thoughts on stuffing, and then you can go ahead next and make your pick.
Oh, listen, I love the stuffing. It was going to be – see, I didn't think you guys would have it high on your list, so I wasn't going to pick it high because I didn't think I needed to.
A little draft strategy here. I love it.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I love it. Like, it's absolutely one of my three or four. I love stuffing. Yeah. I like it a little on the dry side, not too – it can't be all, like, mushy. I don't want mush stuffing. But yeah, give me something that's got a little character to it, and I love that kind of stuffing. So, all right, man, I'm going straight to the dessert, man. Pecan pie, okay? Maybe pecan pie for some of you in different regions of the country, okay? But it tastes the same. I'm going straight for that. I just love it, man. That middle section, that gel is perfect. The pecans on top. The thin crust, don't give me that thick, chunky crust, all right? You can't be doing that. Like you get in the stores, that's not even worth buying. But those people that know how to make it right, that's the way to make it. Got that good thin crust, that nice, not wet crust, but tender crust on a pecan pie. I don't think it gets any better. Simon?
Ben's eyes just glazed over for everybody. He completely forgot where he was for about 60 seconds there. That was great. I'm very interested to see how you guys feel about this because this is the one every year I see you argue about on Twitter if it's a Thanksgiving food or not, but it's absolutely mandatory for me, which is why this is the one thing I am making this year and bringing to my family Thanksgiving because otherwise it won't get made. Mac and cheese. I'm going mac and cheese here. You have to have a good baked mac and cheese, as many cheeses as you like. You have to get the good crust at the top. You have to get the breadcrumb topping right. I need this, and it looks like you guys feel the same.
Yes, 100%. Listen, that mac and cheese is a Thanksgiving dish. You can't leave it out. It has to be there somewhere. I mean, everybody don't have to bring it, but somebody that knows how to cook it needs to bring it. It needs to be brown on top. Whether it's got the bread or not, it's got to be brown on top. If it's not brown when you pull it out, repeat after me, put it back in, all right? It's got to be brown on top. And it can't be wet and runny. Like, it don't need to be dry as all get out, but it can't be all runny. Like, it can't be falling apart on you. It's got to be a good, solid, standalone dish. Got to have it. Rona?
This has been an absolutely phenomenal first round. all of these have been on my notorious Thanksgiving draft list. So, yeah, absolutely. Mac and cheese is right up there for me as well. I love it. Are we doing snake or is it my turn?
No, you go ahead. You keep going.
I'm going to roll with green bean casserole here. A good green bean casserole with the little, what is it, the French onion?
French onion straws.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes, sir. That'll be my second round pick for sure.
Yeah.
Was not on my board.
Probably the first. Yeah, that's the first one that's not on my board. Now, in all fairness, in this part of the country, because I'm down south, they don't make a lot of green bean casseroles in this area. But now I'm a massive green bean guy. Nobody eats more green beans than me at, you know, family events. So I'm all in on the green bean thing, but I haven't been introduced to good green bean casseroles yet. So invite me up for Thanksgiving, man, or ship it down. I'll try it out, Rona.
It's like that. It's like that.
I love it. Ben, go ahead and make your next pick.
Okay. You know how in fantasy drafts you stack wide receivers? All right, I'm stacking desserts, okay?
Of course you
are. So we're going back to the dessert table for another pie, which, by the way, people don't make enough pies anymore. They just make cakes all the time. Where did the pie go, man? So we're going back for what you got to have, a pumpkin pie, okay? Pumpkin pie, there's many different ways to make it. My favorite is just the pumpkin and the thin crust. Some people like the whipped cream and the other kind of lacing you put on top. That's all good, too. But any version of pumpkin pie, bring it on. Go along with my pecan pie. I got to have it. There's no better way after eating a full meal, turkey, bread, mac and cheese, stuffing, you name it. Get a slice of both, pecan pie, pumpkin pie. Simon?
All right, here's where the draft strategy kicks in, right? Because we've done all sides and we've done all desserts. And now I've just kind of told you guys out loud the thing I'm worried about missing out on if I don't do it now. So I'm going to have to hit the classic just to make sure it happens. And I'll bite the bullet and I'll take the gravy. The turkey and gravy. I almost said just gravy. That was embarrassing. I will take the turkey. I have to have the gravy with it, though. Obviously, don't mess it up. But I will take the turkey because I'm deathly afraid of my draft of leaving here without one of the centerpieces. So I'm going to go turkey. I've got mac and cheese on the side so far. Ben's rolling with just desserts at this point. Ronan also has sides. I don't know how this is going to go. We'll hit one more round here, but I'll take the classic turkey. Ronan, what do you got up next?
Man, truthfully, to me, and maybe I just, you know, lack on the turkey. Maybe I just haven't had the good one, but it's always dry. It's never the way that I want it. It's never, I don't know. I'm always disappointed by turkey, but
that's what the gravy's for.
Rarely. Yeah. But you know, then it's all, I don't know. It's meat shouldn't have to have sauce on it. I'll stand on that. It can be a nice addition to it, but it shouldn't need it. Unless you're having burgers. Chicken nuggets, that's different. That's, I mean, standalone meat, your chicken, your your ham, you know, it shouldn't have to be dipped in something or drenched in something or drowning. It should just, it's okay if you want to have it that way, but it shouldn't have to be like that to be edible. Turkey rant. But one thing I'm rarely ever disappointed by are mashed potatoes, which I think you can say a Thanksgiving food.
Absolutely.
The nice buttered ones. There's not really much to say here. It's mashed potatoes. It's a staple. It's good, even not on Thanksgiving. Come on now. Ben?
Yeah, mashed potatoes by themselves, mashed potatoes and gravy, mashed potatoes and peas, mashed potatoes and corn. I'm good with all of it. Absolutely got to have it for Thanksgiving. I'm going back to the dessert table again.
Oh my God.
I'm going to walk away with the desserts I want, man. All right. So we're going apple pie again. Can't be that thick crust stuff that you find in the stores, all right? But that good thin crust, better with the lace over, but doesn't have to have the lace over. You know, it can just be a solid cover. Either one is fine. But give me those good apples. You need to cut them up a little bit. I don't want to pull a whole apple out of my apple pie, okay? Cut them up a little bit, but there's nothing better than a good apple pie done right. Especially if it's juicy, get a little dry on me. Yeah, that's not very good. That good, soft, juicy apple pie, that's the way to go. Simon.
I knew this was the right segment, thinking back to all of Ben's off-season pods, especially on Odds On Favorite, where there was just food talk every single week, and there was always the description is great. I'm gonna round out the draft here with something that was mentioned earlier, and I gotta have rolls. I've gotta have the bread
Yes.
with my bread stuffing, also, I guess. But that's what Thanksgiving's for. I need it because I can make a couple plates, right? My two or three plates to start, and you get a couple rolls on those, and then you go back for some rolls, just some handfuls, right? You don't have to really worry about it. And then I'm getting the next day, I'm getting the roll with the leftover turkey in it
Yes.
in the gravy, and just like having a great time. So I gotta have rolls. That's our Thanksgiving food items draft. Ronan has stuffing, green bean casserole, and mashed potatoes, and a nice side day there for Ronan. Lacking the protein a little bit. But you want
Don't
to
need
talk
it.
some lacking or not lacking. Ben has pecan pie. Ben went for the pie trifecta of the pecan, pumpkin, and apple variety. I think this is just Ronan, tell me if you think this is Ben. Ben just gets to Thanksgiving like 3 hours late, so there's only ever desserts out. Do you think that's how he rolls? Maybe he's eating a like reasonable sized Thanksgiving meal before, and then he's going to the family function when it's just the desserts out. What do you think about that, Ronan?
I'm thinking he's either getting there, 3 hours late, or he'll like sit down, everybody's got their like hunk of plate, and then he's got like a dash of mashed potato, a roll, maybe like some turkey, just not to offend whoever made the turkey, and then just like sitting there and patiently waiting for like the desserts to come out, and then while everyone's because their desserts will come out, maybe like 10, 15 minutes before everybody's done with their meal. And then, everybody's finally done with their meal and they look at the pies and every single one of them are just halfway gone. And it's like, what happened to the pie?
To that point, this is, and we're just speaking for Ben now at this point about what he does at Thanksgiving. This is a dad thing that I'm learning now that my daughter is eating real food.
Yes.
He's eating the real food off of each of his kids' plate. He's got three kids. He doesn't need his own plate. He just will
Facts.
take some turkey from this plate, some potatoes from this plate, some green beans from this plate. You do that enough times, by the time Ben can sit down and be like, "What do I want as my own plate?" There's just a bunch of pie waiting for him. He's having a good time.
Also true. Hey, did I mention the best pie of all is chocolate pie? Lemon meringue on top. You got the little dots oozing out of the meringue. There's nothing better. And it can't be runny. It can't be all like watery. You don't want to eat watered down chocolate. It's got to stand by itself. With the drops oozing out of the moraine. I can't make it, but I know people who can, and they are amazing.
You could take that one undrafted, Ben. There's your UDFA pie. I am
That's my
rolling with
UDFA.
turkey, mac and cheese, and some buttered rolls for my picks. All right. Send us a tweet at StatCheatPod, hit DM us, whatever, with your food takes and why we're crazy. All right, now we're gonna do the big one. And I don't know how this is gonna go, but it's gonna be a fun idea. We'll see what happens. The StatCheat Podcast Thanksgiving Day bingo card. This will be available on Twitter before Thanksgiving Day. So download it on your phone, print it out, do whatever you want to do. Ben, Ron, and I are going to make a bingo card for everybody to take on Thanksgiving to fill out. We are going to do this as the games that are happening across Thanksgiving. So we have our three Thanksgiving Day games. We also have our Black Friday Day game. And then we'll have so football things that are actually going to happen, and then just random things that are going to happen at your or your friend's Thanksgiving Day house. Let's start off with Packers Lions. We're each going to give one bingo card item can be silly, can be normal. But for when you're watching Packers Lions, Ronan, I'm going to start with you. What do you want as your square for Packers Lions?
I'm going to say that the Lions score a rushing touchdown. Am I able to do that? Is that
that's a good one
applicable here? Okay,
that's a great one. This is a little like putting your gambling bet slip together for the week. You want some easy ones. You want some softballs. You need some pluses. Then you need some crazy ones a little bit later. But yeah, I like this. This is a good one. Ben, what are you expecting to see in the Packers Lions game?
I fully 100% expect to see Aiden Hutchinson for the Lions make some big yes, I got a good one. Okay. I expect him to make some big, huge play. Listen, he's a hot cold player, so there will be quarters and even games and weeks where you get nothing from him. But he loves to play prime time. He loves to play in front of big audiences. He loves to play in games that matter. He loves games just like this, and he is a big play machine waiting to happen at some point in any game. So interception, sack strip, sack fumble, something like that, I almost guarantee we're going to see something like that from Hutchinson, maybe two plays like that in this game against the Packers.
That's a great one. That was where I was going to go. You guys are on the Lions side of this. Let me throw a little Packers thing in here. This one's going to be a little bit silly. Matt LaFleur eye roll. We're going to get some sort of play on any of the units. It doesn't have to be Jordan Love induced or anything like that. But we're going to get the camera panned over to Matt LaFleur, head coach of the Green Bay Packers, and we're going to see an eye roll. At some point, it's going to happen. He doesn't have to yell at anybody. It doesn't have to mean they're losing. There will be a Matt LaFleur eye roll. So make sure you are watching your screens to see that. So from Packers Lions, we have Lions score a rushing touchdown. Aiden Hutchinson makes some sort of big play, a sack, force a turnover, tackle for loss, something like that. And then a Matt LaFleur eye roll. Ronan, we're going to go to you next for our next game on Thanksgiving. Cowboys Commanders. What's going to happen here?
I'm going to keep it light, kind of another softball. I'm going to say a camera pan in on Jerry Jones and family.
There you go. I like it.
Great one. Yep. Great one. That's definitely going to happen. Ben, how about you?
Micah Parsons is going to have double-digit sacks in one game against the Washington Commanders. Listen, there's nobody
better. Did you say double-digit sacks?
Yes.
Not
there's
tackles.
Nobody better than Micah Parsons at getting to the quarterback. There's no worse offensive line than the Washington Commanders right now. He loves playing in the game. You know the Cowboys are going to play from the lead. He's not going to worry about the running game. All he's going to do is sack the quarterback a billion times. The Commanders can't protect Howell. They haven't done it all year. He's on this insane sacks pace. And by the way, it's Thanksgiving Day, and Micah Parsons loves to play in front of crowds and games that matter, just like Aiden Hutchinson does. So give me that. Last week, we saw him do this to the Panthers. Parsons wasn't just beating them off the edge. He was doing stunts off the middle. The Panthers interior guys were doing a horrible job picking up simple stunts from Parsons as if they never thought he might do that. It was awful, so the Commanders aren't going to be any better at stopping it. So, yeah, 10 sacks from Micah Parsons on Thanksgiving Day against the Washington Commanders. Count on it.
Sorry, everybody. You just lost that square. That's a bummer. Let me pick a real one here. I'm going to say Sam Howell over 29 and a half pass attempts. I don't know what his over under has been so far this season, but he's chucking it. It's happening. So Sam Howell, 30 or more pass attempts in this game. Ronan, Seahawks 49ers, our Thanksgiving nighttime game, big game for the NFC West, big game for the playoff hunt. What is your card for this one?
You know, this is a tough one. You know, we mentioned the Seahawks injuries between Geno Smith and Kenneth Walker. That's going to be kind of up in the air. So I want to go towards the 49ers side of things. And I'm going to say, you know what? Give me a George Kittle touchdown. George Kittle touchdown.
That's a good one.
I think, you know, big part of that offense, all reliable. I don't know. Thanksgiving just seems like a tight end kind of day. I don't know. It just don't ask me why. It feels like George Kittle is going to have a nice little day there.
You can see George Kittle at the podium after eating the turkey leg, doing the whole
exactly.
thing.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it. Ben, how about you? Seahawks 49ers.
I actually don't mind Chris Collinsworth. I know some people do, but he does tend to get on something and stay on it. So I think we're going to hear him the entire broadcast talk about Brock Purdy in glowing terms unendingly and talk about how this guy's gotten a bad rap over the past 3 or 4 weeks and how he's actually a perfect fit for the 49ers system and how they couldn't find any better and how Shanahan and the 49ers are just going to keep on rolling here because Purdy is just the perfect everything for this 49ers offense. I think that's what we'll hear from Collinsworth.
That's a great one. As I get older, I've appreciated Collinsworth more and more. So I'm with you on that one. I'm going 49ers side as well. I'm going Fred Warner, forced turnover in some capacity. He's going to get an interception, force a fumble, maybe tip a pass that gets intercepted, recovers a fumble, something. Fred Warner is going to have a big game in this one for the 49ers. A final game that we're going to do this bingo card for, Black Friday, this NFL's first Black Friday game. Jets, Dolphins. I also didn't realize this was like a middle of the day game. I assumed this was going to be like a Friday night. This is like 3:30 or something like that. Just super weird. I mean, I guess it's good. Like you go do your shopping in the morning, you take a nap, you watch the game, you still have dinner time. I don't know. But Jets, Dolphins, middle of the day. Ronan, what do you got in this game? Our boy, Tim Boyle, did we ever figure out his name? Tim Boyle, big start, big game for the Jets.
I'm going to say that the Jets get held under 13.5 points. I think that's a pretty – yeah, I think these are all pretty relatively safe ones. So hopefully I'm doing viewer a favor.
Yeah, listen, we got to get bingo, right? We got to get bingo. What do you guys think that everybody should get to do for themselves on Thanksgiving if they get bingo?
I don't know. Criticize everybody else on the podcast for free. I mean, with no comebacks. You know?
If you get bingo, send us a DM us a picture of your card and send us a very long message that you would like us to read on the next podcast. Whatever it is, it could be nice. It could be mean. It could just be full of your takes. Send us a picture of this card filled out, and we will read something of yours on the podcast. That's a good one, Ben. Ben, give me your bingo card space for Jets Dolphins.
Okay, I'll go with this. I think we're guaranteed to see at least 3 quarterbacks play in this game, if not 4. And where I'm going with this, there's several different avenues here. First of all, we know the Jets quarterback struggle, so no one would be surprised if we saw 2 quarterbacks playing for the Jets at different points in that game for just, you know, performance reasons. Hey, let's try to get something going reasons. The other reason is Tagovailoa has had an injury history, so you never know which game, certainly against a brutal Jets defense, that he might get a little banged up and have to sit out. We're seeing tons of quarterbacks. I think we're setting quarterback records for most quarterbacks having started to this point in the season in the NFL and the most teams that have started multiple quarterbacks. So Dolphins fit right into that. But you could also see the Dolphins just have a big enough lead by, say, late third quarter that they just sit out Tagovailoa, and that gets you to the fourth quarterback. So I think you're going to see 3 or 4 quarterbacks in this game.
I'm going to continue the bit here. Robert Saleh changes his facial hair yet again. It's only a week's notice, so it might just be some stubble, right? But this man is going to be so stressed out this week, he's not going to shave. He's not going to remember to shave. So Robert Saleh, we're going to have a little bit of facial hair. All right, let's get into the category of items that are just happening at Thanksgiving. So this can be very generic, the thing you see at Thanksgiving all the time that anybody could see. This could be something that's you specific. Ben has something devious that's coming up in his mind. I know that for sure. But Ronan, let's go to you first. We'll have 4 of these. What's your first thing that's just happening on Thanksgiving?
I'm going to say an exhale followed by "that was good," saying "that was good." we're going to roll with that.
That's incredible. That's a good one. That's excuse my language, but that's the Twitter account shit white people say, right? That's definitely on there. That's a good one. Ben, I just said it. I just said that was good. Ben, what do you got?
I'm going to go after Ronan's Thanksgiving, because in my head, I figure Ronan Thanksgivings are just different somehow. I don't know how. I'm going to say somebody passes out at Ronan's Thanksgiving this year, okay? And this could be for many different reasons. It could be from just the food was so good, we ate too much, we passed that on the couch or in the rocking chair. Or maybe, you know, Ronan's after Thanksgiving party that he has every year, somebody passes out there from just too much consumption of alcohol that evening. There are a lot of different paths, just like there are different paths to the Jets, Dolphins quarterback scenario. There are many different paths to somebody passing out at Roland's Thanksgiving. So that's going to be my number one for this year.
Hey, you call it Thanksgiving. I call it Festive Thirsty Thursday.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to roll with Ben's here a little bit. Not specifically at Ronan's, but someone always falls asleep, right? It always happens. It could be any point of the day. It could be waiting for the food, eating the food late at night during one of these games. But not only do they fall asleep, they wake up and act like they weren't asleep, right? Whether they're defensive about it, like, oh, I wasn't asleep. Or they just kind of like wake up and join the conversation, wake up and start watching the game again. Somebody who is sleeping will wake up and just keep rolling like nothing happened. Ronan, hit us with your next one.
All right. We are going to go with, oh, Lord. There's a couple different, you know what? I'm going to go after Ben here. He went after me. I'm going to go after him. I'm going to say Ben himself will consume two or more pieces of pie on Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's an easy one there. Yeah. No doubt. <That's great. laughs>
There we go.
That's so good. Free space for everybody right there.
Yes, free space for everybody.
And these are actually built in. We will have enough squares. This will be a good 5x5. There will be a free space in the middle, all of that. There's another easy one for everybody. Don't put it near the Micah Parsons 10-plus sacks because you want to be able to use this one. Ben, give us another.
All right, so my beautiful in-laws, I love them to death. I have a really good set of in-laws. I really do. But they tell the dumbest jokes you have ever heard. So you are guaranteed from the time you walk through the doors, the time you leave 3 hours later, to hear about 50 of the dumbest jokes you will ever hear in your life. Guaranteed. They just can't resist it. Anything they see is fodder for a joke. And it might not make any sense unless you're on a fifth grade level. Love them to death, but the jokes are awful. We don't mind using jokes from 100 years ago. Jokes that have been worn out 20 years ago, it doesn't matter. We're going to trot them out, and we're all going to laugh as if we've never heard them before.
That's so great. Hear a bad joke, but laugh. Perfect. Let's see. My next one is going to be somebody that you're there with. I don't know how big your guys' Thanksgivings get, or even just how involved in the football happening that somebody you're around is. Somebody is going to look at the screen and say something, and you're going to think, you haven't watched football all season long. You have no idea what you're talking about. You have no idea what you're watching. It might be something like they're like, clearly this person hasn't watched in 5 years because they said something that would have made sense before the pandemic. It can be something that's just like, that doesn't even make sense for anything related to what's happening on that screen right now. But someone is going to say something while the game is on, and you're going to know you haven't watched a lick of football all season.
I like it. That's a good one.
I don't know how often this happens to you guys, but
lot, man. Yes. Yes. All the time.
Ronan, give us your next one.
I like that one. I'm going to go with someone tries to feed the family animal of whoever's hosting. You know, the dog might get a bite of the turkey. The cat might, you know, get snuck some mashed potatoes, but the family animal does eat well on Thanksgiving as well.
That's so good. That's so great.
It's the bad one. The animals can all tell that I'm the soft touch. They just look at me and they know this guy will slip me something good.
That's amazing. It would be Ben. Ben, hit us with your next one.
I'm going to say that it's Simon's Thanksgiving because there's three games that day. At Simon's Thanksgiving, he or somebody in his family is going to get irate at something that happens in a football game, even if their team isn't playing. Is that kind of the way I imagine it happening, and probably not that infrequently?
Yeah, this one's going to hit at – what time's the first game? Is the first game at 1 or do they – no, it's at 11, right? They do it at 11? At 11:05, this is going to hit, so – congrats to everybody. And for these ones that are specific to our individual Thanksgivings, we have to be sure to tweet when it happens so everybody can check in on it. But that's a really good one. Someone get really mad at something that happened in one of the games at Simon's Thanksgiving. My next one is going to be that one's mean. I don't want to do that one.
No, please do the mean one.
There will be something you put on your plate thinking it's going to go well, and it's not going to go well.
True.
It's just for whatever reason, it by itself just doesn't taste good. It's not working with what else is on your plate. Maybe Ben feeds it to your dog instead of you getting to eat it. You're going to put something on your plate and it's not going to go the way you think. And you're going to do the spread it around the plate thing, or the, like, I'm going to take one big bite of this and leave the rest of it. Something on your plate's not getting eaten the way you had planned to.
It's so disappointing too, because it's like a draft prospect or a coach that you just knew was going to be great. And you look at this food dish and you think, that has the perfect texture. It all looks right. I think I've even had this before. And you try it and somebody puts something in there that is just like, tastes like gas or something. It is awful. And you're like, darn it, where can I jump this?
That's when you call the dog over, Ben. That's what you're doing. Yes. All right, we have one more round here. Ronan, what's going to be your last bingo space?
Unlikely, but it would be funny if it would happen. I'm going to say one of the floats from the Macy's Day Parade floats away. Just a little bit of chaos.
If this happens, we're all going to blame you. America's going to blame you.
It might be my fault.
Oh God. Circulate the photo, everybody. Ben, what's your final one?
I'm split. Do I go with the nice one or do I go with the mean one?
You have to go with the mean one. You guys made me do the mean one, so you have to do it.
Okay. I'm gonna say the Commanders Cowboys game, one of the coaches does something stupid that we're all talking about Monday night. So you got Mike McCarthy, you got Ron Rivera, which honestly McCarthy hasn't done a whole lot of McCarthyisms this year. He's been okay. But, I mean, hey, it's Thanksgiving Day. Let's give a little bit to everybody. So I figure between McCarthy and Rivera, somebody does something that all of America is questioning and they don't get it.
Yeah, that's such a good one. We should probably put that in place of your 10 sacks for Micah Parsons, but no, we'll do this. Because this is the personal touch of you, me, and Ronan will slack each other when it happens and say, I cannot believe that just happened. So there's the personal touch that'll happen on our Thanksgivings. My final selection is I want to stick to the food here. Somebody is going to get up and go get another plate at some point in the day, whether it's they get their second plate super quick, right? We all know those people. It's probably us. Yes. On this podcast. Or it's like everyone's kind of already eaten and the pies are about to come out and people are starting to put away the real food and someone sneaks back up there for that like last plate of the turkey and everything. Someone's going to go up and get a plate that somebody's response is, you're getting another plate? And then however everyone responds to that is different, I'm sure. The response doesn't matter. At some point in your Thanksgiving, somebody will get up for another plate and be met with you're getting another plate.
Yeah, I think that's almost universal, right? That response happens. My response is, hey, that's none of your business. If I want four or five plates, that's all right. I will say, I know people that I am related to, I won't say how, who are awful quick to get that second plate before they're sure anybody else has gotten their first. Man, are they quick on that. But, you know, that aside, you know, hey, third, fourth helpings, you know, that's legit. You know, that's expected. Yeah, listen, everybody have a great Thanksgiving. We will. I always do. I love it. I wish you guys, Simon, Ronan, all the audience, hope you enjoy every bit of it. We certainly will be.
Absolutely, Ben. We echo the same. So thank you all so much for listening to another episode of the Stat Sheet Podcast. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at Stat Sheet Pod so you can get this bingo card so we can talk all things Thanksgiving football, because it is going to be a blast. We hope everybody has a great holiday. Everybody drives safe. Remember all the driving rules that I did in the PSA last week. So for Ronan, for Ben, for me, Thank you all so much for listening. Have a great Thanksgiving. We will talk to you next week.